from DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adam.
If you don't mind, I want to start the last show of the week, and for me, the last show for a week, with just something fun. This is not the most important thing in the world, but it is kind of fun for me, and I love the way this continues to develop. This particular storyline here continues to sort of take shape here, and it's sort of the intersection of two ideas that Georgia fans talk about a lot. The first one is, who were the most important recruits for Georgia for the class of 2019? That's a conversation that Jeff Sintel and I have all the time. It's a conversation that I have with many of you in our comment sections, both live during video on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily, in the posted comment section when the podcast appears at DogNation.com. We just sort of have that conversation all the time. The other part of this is, hey, how committed is Nolan Smith, the five-star defensive end who's been a UGA commit for a long time, thought to be one of the leaders of this class, but also the kind of guy that gets a lot of attention from other programs and at times, you know, sort of, you know, takes his visits from place to place. The intersection of those two ideas, those two narratives, are some of the things that Nolan Smith has said in the past about five-star cornerback Andrew Booth. Now, let me first of all be very clear here. I believe that Nolan Smith is a rock-solid UGA commit, no matter how many visits he takes or what he says about other schools. Ultimately, for the 2019 class, I believe that Nolan Smith is going to be absolutely not just a part of that class, but really a leader of that class, a Richard LeCount-style recruit for the class of 2019. And I do believe that Andrew Booth, probably along with the defensive tackle Trayvon Walker, among the most important recruits that Georgia could possibly sign here for the class of 2019. So it was really fun for me a couple of weeks ago when Nolan Smith was caught up with by Jeff Sintel and Dog Nation. They were talking about a number of subjects, and Nolan Smith at that time made it very, very clear in terms of the recruit that he wanted to see join him at UGA. He made his big pitch to the five-star cornerback from Archer High School, Andrew Booth. Do you remember when Nolan Smith said this?
I need DBs. I need a back end. Andrew Booth, I need you. Andrew Booth, I need you. You're a DB. You're an amazing DB. I need DBs. Like that. We already got the wide receivers. We already got the running backs. We already got D linemen, inside linebackers, outside linebackers. We need DBs.
First of all, I just love that clip. You don't really need much of an excuse to play the clip. It's Nolan Smith sounding very much like UGA fans. I think Nolan is a big UGA fan, and when he says that, it really mirrors what I think Georgia fans are feeling in a lot of ways about this 2019 class. But I was thinking about that clip from Nolan based on something that Jeff Sintel wrote this week as a part of his Sintel Intel at DogNation.com. By the way, my buddy Jeff Sintel will be here on the show in just a few minutes. We'll talk to him about this subject and a lot of other subjects. But once again, Nolan Smith interviewed again by Dog Nation. Once again, the whole deal about just how committed Nolan Smith is sort of shows up in all of this. That's fascinating. We'll get with Jeff on that in a moment. But once again, Nolan Smith sort of doing his part to make a big push for the cornerback Andrew Booth. I love this line. If you're watching on video, you'll be able to see it. If you're listening, I'll read it to you. Here is what Nolan Smith told Jeff Sintel for the Sintel Intel this week about Andrew Booth. We need him. We really need him. Tag him in this story. He always needs to know how much we need him there at Georgia. Really good stuff from Nolan Smith there on Andrew Booth. And as I said, to sort of start all this off, for me, it's the intersection of two things. You can go read what Jeff wrote at DogNation.com. That's just one of many great quotes in there, both from Nolan about his relationship with Georgia. Noah Kane, the running back and teammate there at IMG Academy, talks about how much Nolan loves Georgia. And that's, I think, validated here all once again. But also, you know, we do see a scenario at Georgia where Georgia clearly does need those defensive backs, lockdown cornerbacks. Andrew Booth is not only the best in this state, he may be the best in the entire country, and I think it's cool that Nolan Smith is making a strong push for him, although that's a push that's got to continue because, as you know, there are a lot of suitors for Andrew Booth, and I don't think it's could probably be said right now that he is necessarily the leader here, but nonetheless, Georgia doing a sort of full-court press on Andrew Booth, and Nolan Smith kind of leading the way on that. We'll have more from Jeff Sintel on this coming up and on a lot of other subjects here. Really fun conversation with Jeff Sintel later on here on Dog Nation Daily. For now, though, let me shift gears here for a moment off the top of our show and deal with, you know, some, I guess, less than stellar news for one 2018 signee, at least as it has been reported by 2018 24/7 Sports. Let me go back in time here to National Signing Day in 2018. You know, Georgia signed just, you know, a million 4- and 5-star recruits, the best of the best, the biggest names, you know, really as rated by the industry, Rivals, 24/7, ESPN, everybody in between. There were a couple of defensive tackles, though, that were probably a little bit less heralded as prospects. Jordan Davis was one of those. Tremel Walthour was the other. And I think for a lot of UGA fans, maybe Walthour and Davis, you know, it could be said that for some UGA fans, they were a bit of an afterthought. Maybe not guys that a lot of Georgia fans were necessarily paying all that much attention to. But Kirby Smart himself on National Signing Day made it clear that for a Georgia program that needs more big defensive tackles, Davis and Walthour were clearly in the Georgia plans. Here was Kirby Smart from Signing Day touting the two defensive tackles that Georgia did sign for 2018.
We think Jordan is a tremendous football player. He's great size and great toughness. Same thing with Tremel. I think it's a position of need for us. So those guys are going to fill a great role for us, because when you start looking at the SEC, I mean, the defensive line is what makes a difference in all these teams, and that's where we want to be. We want to have big physical guys that can rush the passer and push the pocket, and we think both those guys give us that.
So that's why Kirby Smart says that both Walthour and Davis were valuable to UGA because of the position of need that it was. But then we started hearing these rumblings from Walthour over the last few weeks, or about Walthour, that he wasn't going to be a part of this class, that there was the idea out there that he might grayshirt, in other words, have to delay his enrollment. Maybe it's because of an academic issue or whatever else, that Walthour was going to be, you know, not joining all these guys here this week when they start arriving this summer. When Chip Towers spoke on Towers Take a couple of weeks ago, he explained that if Walthour ended up not being at Georgia, it wouldn't be because of the gray shirt reason. That gray shirt was sort of an incorrect term to use in terms of how it impacted this 2018 signing for Georgia, Tremel Walthour. Here is what Chip said about this a couple of weeks ago.
The bottom line is Walthour can't gray shirt, okay? That terminology has been misused from the outset on this whole thing. I've been guilty of it. I parroted, you know, what some other reports were early on using the term gray shirt. You can't gray shirt once you've signed a letter of intent. Walthour signed a letter of intent in February. Grayshirt is when you are asked to hold off on signing anything until you pay your own way a semester or two, and then they put you on scholarship after that. So that's not an option for Walthour. Ultimately, we'll see the end of May, May 31st.
So that's Chip Towers there on that. He said we'll see May 31st when all this goes down. And we do find out here this week, as May comes to an end and June gets ready to start, that indeed Tremel Walthour will not be coming to Georgia here this year. Kip Adams, I guess, reports this first for 24/7 Sports, that Walthour going to go junior college instead. So whatever the terminology is, gray shirt, delayed enrollment, junior college here for a while, one way or another, Tremel Walthour is not arriving at Georgia right now, and obviously this is a tough situation for him personally, and we wish him well as he kind of deals with all this and goes through all that. But here on this show, our focus is also on what's going on with UGA here, and obviously for Georgia, as Kirby Smart has said many times, the defensive tackle is maybe the biggest position of need. It was a concern for him during the spring when he saw his big physical offensive line having success against a somewhat depleted defensive line on the basis of injury and the basis of the fact that guys like Trenton Thompson aren't in this program anymore. Trenton choosing to leave after his junior season. You know, Walthour's presence was at least going to be depth for Georgia here this summer heading into the fall, and right now they won't have that. We'll see where this goes. Obviously, here in the show, we wish Tremel Walthour his best and our best wishes to him as he works through his time at junior college and gets back to the major college level and getting ready to contribute once again, and we'll obviously be following very closely the work of the Georgia defensive line here this summer. It is a position in which Georgia needs more depth. They're going to try to answer that emphatically with the class of 2019. Things seem to be going that direction pretty well right now. Georgia looks to have pretty good starters here and pretty good, you know, key rotational guys for the defensive line. Beyond that, though, there are still some question marks, and that'll be one of the big storylines later on this summer. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Good to have you with us. Of course, as you know by now, you can catch us a lot of ways. Video, Dog Nation Facebook page, Dog Nation YouTube page, Dog Nation on the Twitter feed. We are live starting at 10 a.m. on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. And by the way, 960 The Ref, also your home for Georgia baseball here this weekend as the Diamond Dogs get the regional going on Friday. We'll have more on that coming up in a moment here. You can also check us out podcast form, Apple Podcasts, Android devices, the world famous DogNation.com, SoundCloud, everything in between. Just glad to have you with us here today on the Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. And as we said, Marco's brings it all to you. And Marco's got a special reminder for you, and I want you to listen very closely on this, because how about this great price from Marco's? Say hello to authentic Italian quality pizza from Marco's, where you get fresh made dough, an original sauce recipe, 3 signature cheeses on every pizza. And right now you can enjoy 2 medium, 2 topping pizzas for just $6.99 each. Every store, every day, the Italian way. Hello Primo at participating locations. How about $6.99 each for those 2 topping, 2 medium pizzas there from Marco's? That is really good stuff. We'll have Jeff Sintel coming up a little later on here today on a Dog Nation Daily. I do want to mention here for a moment, I briefly said this off the very top of the show. Let me restate, though, what I have said throughout the week, that this is my last day here for a week. Dog Nation Daily on a bit of a hiatus next week as I go on vacation. I appreciate you letting me do that, be away with my family here for a week as we enjoy some time at the beach. We're really excited about that. I'm also incredibly excited about getting back the following Monday and getting rolling here again throughout the summer here on Dog Nation Daily. Really excited about that. But I did want to let you know that there will be no Dog Nation Daily next week as I go on vacation. Once again, I appreciate your patience with that. Thanks for allowing us to do that. And we're looking forward to a fun summer here on our program. We'll be called the Dog Days of Summer as we roll through here once we get back next week. For now, let me go back and let you hear a little bit more from Kirby Smart. You know, the SEC spring meetings took place this week in Destin, Florida. We've played some audio throughout the week that our buddy Mike Griffith was able to capture for us there as he was on the scene covering all of that. There were 2 more clips, though, from Kirby Smart I did want to play. And they're on different subjects, but they in a lot of ways sort of dovetail back into things that we've talked about here recently on our program. First of all, Kirby Smart was asked, you know, from one of the reporters there in his media session, hey, you know, how long did it take you to get over what happened in that national championship game loss to Alabama, that final play with the touchdown, with the touchdown throw? How long did it take you to get over that? And what Kirby says here is the kind of thing that I think a lot of Georgia fans are going to appreciate. And it really matches what I've heard from a lot of you on this subject since it's come up here over the course of the last few days. Here is Kirby talking about sort of pushing the loss to Alabama aside and getting focused on what the main thing was after that. Here's Kirby Smart.
I mean, honestly, the way the world is now, we had to recruit within 2 days of that. So, I mean, I'm in a home selling the season we had and the progress we've made. You can't let that play beat you twice. So in this profession, you learn quickly. There's going to be plays that we're going to make and win a game, and they made great play and they won the game. So I think it was a lot more important for us to move on and worry about recruiting than to dwell on that. I mean, it's certainly not something that I'm sitting here focused on now.
Yeah, I think that's really good stuff from Kirby Smart. And, you know, the reason why we talked about that on Dog Nation Daily not too long ago was because of what one of the preseason magazines said about how, you know, Georgia's 2017 year, even though it made the college football playoff, was a disappointment. And I heard from so many of you on that line that said, not a disappointment to us. We saw Georgia make the college football playoff, use that momentum to get the number one class in the country, and use that number one class in the country to build even better seasons, 2018, 2019, and beyond. It sounds like Kirby Smart agrees with that. I think, obviously, here on this show, we very much agree with Kirby. Listen, it happened. It's a part of college football history now. It was a miserable moment to live through. The next day here on our program, we were obviously devastated about it, but it didn't last very long. And ever since then, the news, the momentum for Georgia has been overwhelmingly positive, and I think there's a lot more chapters in this Georgia-Alabama rivalry to be written beyond just what happened with Tua Tagovailoa there in the national championship game. So a great answer from Kirby Smart. Also, something else we talked about recently here in our program was the transition from Jim Chaney as full-time offensive coordinator to now co-offensive coordinator and tight ends coach, the emergence of James Coley as the new quarterbacks coach after having been wide receivers coach the year before, and what would that do to the development of sophomore quarterback Jake Fromm? Most of us here in this program seem to think he's going to be fine. And when Kirby Smart was asked about that transition, the new role for Coley, the divided responsibilities for Jim Chaney, Kirby seems very excited and optimistic about the entire thing. Here's what he said on that.
I think it's great. I think it was a very smooth transition. It was a very easy transition because Chaney's still over the top of the offensive staff. We've got a new dynamic in Cortez, which was great for the receiver room. Coley provides a lot of energy in the quarterback room. So very pleased with where it is and excited to see where it goes.
So, once again, good stuff there from Kirby Smart. That's from the SEC spring meetings. That was sort of a fascinating thing to see and be a part of. Now it's time to, before we bring on Jeff Sintel, get ready to preview a big weekend coming up for UJ Athletics. It's part of our Kroger Click List checklist. We do it every Friday here on Dog Nation Daily, and it is a big weekend for the Georgia Bulldogs, both in terms of the Diamond Dogs, who will start the NCAA Regional today. They are hosting that. They'll play Campbell here today, and then the other 2 teams are Troy and Duke there in that. So Georgia gets going at 7:30 tonight. It was really fun yesterday to be able to have David Johnson on the program, who will call the game as a part of the broadcast team for there for Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, as Georgia looks to get some wins here against the Camels of Campbell and then move on to a Super Regional, which the Dogs would also be able to host, likely against, I guess, Texas Tech there. The softball team, the College World Series, they did lose last night to Florida, but they will look to advance and keep it going here this weekend. So we'll be cheering on the softball team there as well. Of course, the Kroger Click List, all brought to you by Kroger, who reminds you, winner, winner, chicken dinner when you don't have a lot of time but want to have a lot of flavor. The Kroger Deli chicken meals are the way to go. $12.99 includes 8-piece fried or baked chicken meal, plus a side and rolls. Visit your local Atlanta Kroger today. Awesome stuff there. That's part of our Kroger Click List every Friday here on Dog Nation Daily. And looking forward to watching the Diamond Dogs and the softball team here in the College World Series this weekend. All right, it's great to have you with us here today. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. We got a lot of more fun stuff coming throughout the program. But to get updated on everything happening with UGA recruiting, let's get ready to welcome in our buddy Jeff Sintel right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Say hello to Jeff Sintel. I love our Friday conversations. We get a chance to touch on a lot of things that Jeff has written, a lot of the twists and turns of the never-ending storyline that involves UGA recruiting. And, Jeff, I'll first of all say good morning to you. Hope your summer is going well here. And I don't know if you got a chance to hear, but we started the show today by talking about some of the quotes that are, or one quote in particular, that five-star defensive end Nolan Smith gave you in your piece at DogNation.com this week about the Andrew Booth stuff. We'll get to that in a moment. But the overall tone that you get from reading your conversation with Nolan and what other recruits have said about Nolan, for any Georgia fan that's doubting the level of commitment for Nolan Smith, it would certainly appear that he is just as committed as ever, right?
Oh, yeah. I think the main tone of that piece was basically two things. One, the Georgia's longest tenured commitment, all the way back to January, I believe, of 2017, is also that commitment right there is just as strong as ever. And maybe the second layer of the narrative is simply all those conversations were about Nolan Smith is going to flip. It's probably best served now to use those in sentences that involved him working to flip guys to Georgia and not Nolan flipping from Georgia.
Yeah, I think that's really well said, Jeff, that he's got a gravitational pull right now. He does start to feel a bit like Richard LeCount for that class of 2017. And Jake Fromm was like that a bit, too, for the class of 2017. But LeCount was really the guy that sort of had that branding for himself. And one of the things that I think is the most similar about these two is that when LeCount was kind of going through all of this two cycles ago, there was a contagious nature to his fun. He was enjoying all of this, and you couldn't help but get sort of wrapped up in that, too. He just sort of made other people around him have fun, the recruits, the fans like myself that follow along with all of this. And when I'm reading what you wrote, the quotes that you got here this week, once again, you sort of get wrapped up in all this again all over. And the fun that Nolan Smith has with all of this, it's sort of hard for a Georgia fan, I think, not to sort of join in and start having some fun, too. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think it's probably everybody compares. Will Nolan be as effective as Richard LeCount? Is he kind of the old school type Pied Piper and ambassador? I think it's just every generation. I mean, it's every cycle of recruiting. You like to have that guy, and even 2018 had a guy, but Justin Fields did it a totally different way when he was kind of working on guys to join him. So, I mean, you know, Nolan's a guy that it's just funny how I do think there was a period where his commitment was in doubt. I think that was sometime last summer. But I think Fields to Georgia, the season Georgia had last year, was the final things that would just convince Nolan he needed to double down on his dreams of staying in Georgia and playing for Georgia. Again, he's, if you look at the 24/7 sports composite, he's the number 6 overall recruit in the country, but 24/7 sports, their singular ratings have him at number 2 overall. So that's a higher rated recruit than Fromm, a higher rated recruit than LeCount. It's as highly rated as Justin Fields was last year when the final rankings came out. So that is just it is very interesting how he's the guy. He already talks about wanting to wear Lorenzo Carter's jersey. And, yeah, that's one of those things. I guess we never say never in the recruiting business, but man, Jiminy Christmas. I think Nolan Smith is stacking up a lot of proprietary evidence that would say that that one is about as terra firma as it is ever going to get.
The other thing that we really like here is his continued push for Andrew Booth. You know that we're somewhat Booth-obsessed here from time to time on Dog Nation Daily, and the fact that Nolan Smith, who had the great line with you in an interview that you did with him not too long ago about how we need Andrew Booth, and he tells you in this Centel Intel piece this week of make sure you tag Andrew Booth in this story. I mean, I think for those of us that view that elite cornerback as just about as close to a must-get as you can have for this class, with all due respect to Trayvon Walker and some really top-flight defensive tackles here, it's kind of cool, I think, for many of us, both me, the speaker, and the listeners here to this program, to see Nolan Smith echoing the sentiment of so many fans in terms of how big of a position of need and player of need Andrew Booth indeed is.
Yeah, it's funny. It sounds like, Brandon, have you hunkered down, and is that your got to get Georgia guy for 2019 now? Is that the Andrew Booth train has left the station for you? Sounded like that you've passed the torch there from Trevon Walker to Andrew Booth, maybe because you feel that there's more need to tug on that rope for Dog Nation.
Yeah, I do, and I don't like counting chickens before they hatch or whatever, tired cliche you want to use. And I know that Trevon Walker, I guess, is visiting South Carolina this weekend. But overall, I still feel pretty good that that Walker seems to be, at the very least, a very strong Georgia lean. I don't want to count that before it's in the barn here, but there clearly seems to be a little bit more work to be done on the Andrew Booth side, which is one of the reasons why I like the vocal nature of Nolan Smith's pursuit of him.
Yeah, there's other guys that you will eventually rise to the list about those that'll, I think you'll have probably different guys for different months, especially the stretch run. But, the main thing that I want to underscore right here is Georgia has three very solidly committed five-star commitments, and they've been committed for well over a year now. So, well, almost a year. Dominic Blaylock actually goes to mid-July. But those guys, remember, Georgia only finished with 7 5-stars last year, and they've had three for a ginormous amount of recruiting time, especially the way these kids get recruited. And it's now really different. June is an official visit weekend for a lot of guys. They're taking their visits. They got to get those in before the last weekend in June before a month-long dead period arises. And, I just think with a lot of these guys and their processes and what they're looking for, there are other big names. Lewis Sign is a name that probably might be the safety guy that fans should think about there, a nation's number three safety. And, everybody seems to make sure they know the name N'Kobe Dean is the alternative to what happened with Mr. Papo out of Grayson. There's lots of huge names. We introduced Rian Davis to the readers a lot, gave them a really good profile of him recently. And, another guy that it sounds like he is speaking out of both sides of his mouth, but also winning the talking season game, because that's what the month of June is. It's talking season, analysts talking about how good guys are and prospects talking about all the schools that they love. And there was a guy in town this week by the name of Quayshawn Fuller. That's another name for us to get used to, Brandon. Quayshawn Fuller.
Yeah.
He's a guy that sounds really committed to FSU. His family has a statue right near the bookstore in Tallahassee, but he says some very flowery things about the University of Georgia, and this was his third trip in the last 4 months, I believe.
Don't think I didn't notice that on Fuller. I actually want to talk to you about him on a couple of subjects here coming up in a moment. Before we get to that, I guess let me squeeze in some bad news, and you can kind of tell us, what your thoughts are on all this. We find out that Tramell Walthour is going to go junior college. That was first reported by 24/7 Sports. It's been kind of backed up by a few outlets since then. And, in one form or fashion, I think a lot of Georgia fans had kind of gotten used to the notion that Walthour probably wouldn't or had a very good chance of not being here this week, whether it was, what was initially thought to be a gray shirt deal or whatever. I think a lot of Georgia fans thought there was a really good chance that Walthour was not coming. Now we find out, I guess, that it's going to be junior college here. What does this mean for him personally? What does this mean for Georgia now down to just one additional defensive tackle when the class of 2018 is fully in effect here?
Yeah, but I guess you can kind of count Jay Hayes for that as well, because I don't even know if Tramell Walthour was going to be a guy. I was looking at him as clearly a redshirt type guy for Georgia, especially with the introduction of Devontae Wyatt. You got to think about Devontae Wyatt there too. You got to think about Jay Hayes, the grad transfer from Notre Dame, and you also have to think about Jordan Davis, the ginormous individual out of Charlotte. So, to me, Brandon, I think we'd heard these things for a while, but we're not, at least myself personally, I can speak for myself, I'm not in the prospect embarrassment business right there until there comes a time to simply report the news. I would venture to say that fans throughout the years won't know how close a lot of guys were to not getting their grades in order or getting their grades in order. And I just think that's a story that doesn't need to be written, especially when there's some makeup work to do or catch-up work that sometimes always happens in the classroom. And I just think that's not a story until it is determined that they will no longer be able to enroll and they won't qualify and they'll have to go somewhere else. The big things right now for Walthor is he going to be like that unique situation there with Devontae Wyatt? Did he have a qualifying score? Did he need to go to two semesters, to two full years of junior college? That's what people will look for there. And the things I know about Walthor is I think when our Dog Nation colleague Chip Towers was doing a lot of his next generation stuff reporting, he was taking a long time to get his score. He was taking a long time to qualify. So to me, it leads me to believe that I think he will have a traditional stay in junior college. Now, I might be wrong. But to me, then, if that's the case, if he spends 2 years in junior college, then that he becomes a class of 2020 recruit. And then at that time, you start to wonder, wow, where will Georgia be at the defensive tackle spot? Will they have other guys they like at defensive tackle as well? Will they still kind of honor both sides here, honor that initial commitment made by Tremell Walthor? And remember, Tremell Walthor is not a five-star defensive tackle in the class of 2018. He is a three-star prospect. I think he rated around the number 50 defensive tackle nationally. So that's the story. We really hate to hear that about Tremell Walthor not being able to come right away and play and enroll at the University of Georgia. And it sounds like he has some work to do.
All right, you mentioned Quayshon Fuller a moment ago, the current Florida State commit, but a guy that has certainly said some nice things about UGA lately and has had more than his share of visits here to the Athens campus. And there are a couple of things that sort of jump out to me about Fuller, and a lot of this has to deal with kind of what you wrote about him. First of all, when I look at those size specs, he's listed as a strong side defensive end. Is there a chance that this young man is a defensive tackle once he gets to the University of Georgia?
I think, if he choose Georgia.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. Assuming he were to get here or wherever he plays major college football, is there a chance that he's a defensive tackle?
I think everybody. I don't know how honest coaches are. Some of them are, some of them aren't. But I think if you're a young man in high school and you're already over 275 pounds and you play the defensive line and you're also, he's got size, he's 6'4", I think eventually – if you had to place a Coca-Cola wager on that, Brandon, I would say that all signs point to you being 320, 320, 325 when you get to be in college after about 3 or 4 months, and they put that good weight on you. And I just say when you're already that big in high school, it already tells me that the future is probably going to be an interior defensive lineman unless you were just really special. Now, if you look at Fuller's film, he can do a lot of things, and he even said that Georgia wants him to be a guy that can slide up and down the line. So it'd be a 3-technique, 5-technique. And then they also mentioned some outside linebacker as well because they think he can do those types of things in space. And that's just what Georgia wants. They want that big guy with size that can hold up in the run game but is also agile enough to play out in space when teams want to go hurry up so they're not a liability if they get left on the field and they can rush the passer. And I think Fuller is a guy, he's been committed to FSU for over a year, but that's just the model. You could say Joe Recruit X, and the things that get Georgia excited, especially on defense, are guys that can play multiple positions, have a lot of size and length and speed, and they won't be a liability on second down and third down. So most of the SEC now is a nickel league. Most of the times the base formation is teams like Georgia are in nickel. So they want those very versatile, highly adaptable players.
You mentioned earlier that Justin Fields, in a lot of ways, was the Richard LeCount or Nolan Smith. He was that leader for the 2018 class. In the piece that you wrote about Quayshon Fuller this week, we see kind of another example of his attractiveness to recruits. And it's not necessarily an intuitive thing to say that a 2019 defensive lineman would be drawn to Georgia because of a 2018 quarterback signee that's not expected to be the starter here as a freshman. But nonetheless, Fuller really cites his relationship with Fields as one of the reasons why he likes Georgia as much as he does. You know this better than anybody because you're the one that wrote the story. What is it about Fields that attracts guys like Fuller and others? You know, he is, at first blush, not quite as charismatic necessarily. I'm talking about from a vocal standpoint as LeCount and Nolan Smith, but clearly he's got a more quiet charisma that clearly draws a lot of people to him.
Well, Brandon, they're on media. I mean, they're mass media. It's funny. You look at the followers Justin has. You look at the profile, and that's been enhanced by the Elite 11, and that's been enhanced by what he did at the Nike opening. But it's also it's been enhanced by their reality TV stars to some extent. And, you know, it's an ancillary benefit, but one of the things Fuller grew to appreciate Justin Fields before he actually met Justin Fields was that QB1 series, you know, on the Go90 platform and on Rated Red. I mean, that documentary that covered that senior year, some guys watch it, they binge watch it all the way through because they want to see how other top players do in high school and what their experiences were like. It's just kind of like comparing everyone else's lives to what they see on Facebook or what they see on Instagram. And Quashawn Fuller was a guy that saw Justin, and he also saw Jake Fromm the year before. And in some ways, it has been a billboard for Georgia football, kind of a hidden billboard, or, you know, kind of one of those that it's on the down low. But they got to see Jake Fromm and all he was about in season one of QB1, and they saw Justin Fields in season two. And then when Quashawn Fuller actually met Fields on the Georgia campus inside the complex, he was like, hey, I know that guy. And he came across basically just like the same guy it was he saw on the screen. And that, in some ways, turned out to be very good low-key promotional material for the Georgia football program.
All right, last thing for you, Jeff. We'll squeeze this in. Kirby Smart this week, speaking at the SEC spring meetings, kind of talked about the obvious challenge of keeping multiple quarterbacks happy in what is kind of an age in which quarterbacks want to play, and they sort of move around to find places they can play. We saw this play out with the third-string quarterback, Stetson Bennett. There is a lot of thought amongst the college football world here that one day this may play out with either Jake Fromm or Justin Fields. Kirby acknowledged this week that it's not an easy thing to do, you know, given the current nature of the business there. What did you make of what Kirby had to say about this? I know you wrote a bit about it, but I was hoping you might expand on some of those ideas here with us here. I found it to be pretty interesting how candid Kirby was. I thought it was sort of an interesting window into his thought process and all of this. Did you see it that way?
Yeah, Brandon, if we're talking about diagnosing an issue, I thought Kirby cut right to the chase and gave some really good, maybe even necessary triage on the situation, because he pointed it all the way back to high school football and how in the eighth and ninth grade, these young guns sit there and they figure out, okay, which high school can I go to where I can play as a freshman, start as a sophomore, and start for 3 years? And they line it up to find a situation that best benefits them and their exposure and getting all those reps. And it's just the same process carrying forward. A lot of these schools, a lot of these players sit there and look at opportunities in college football and they go, okay, that guy's a junior. That guy's not an All-American. That guy's about to go pro. That's my shot. They don't have anybody else coming in. I can be the guy. They kind of want that old Mark Richt world of quarterback recruiting, which is not going to exist at the University of Georgia, and it's not going to exist in any program that wants to be in the championship hunting business for a long time. And I thought Kirby just cut, Coach Smart cut straight to the chase, talked about something that was systemic and something that's a real issue with high school football that's now trickling up to college football. And let's just take this thing right on. You and I both know, Brandon, if Justin Fields has not played at all anything significantly except mop-up duty by the end of the 2019 season, wow, you know, that's going to be handwriting on the wall a little bit. Or, you know, but that's such a tug of war there, because you've got Jake Fromm there, who basically did everything what everybody wants their hyped up ballyhooed quarterback recruits to do in 2017, and he's earned the starting job. So what's the mixture? Is it Is it an 80-20 in the first year? Is it a 60-40 in the second year? Is it a 70-30 in the second year? You've got to find some way if you're Georgia, because this is, you know, I'll call it what it is, kind of rich program problems, where I'm sure everybody sees that headline a lot about Georgia only has two scholarship quarterbacks on the roster. But I bet the majority of the SEC would trade their quarterback depth chart situation for Georgia's depth chart situation and not even hiccup or blink about it. But you've got a situation here where people start wondering and projecting, and college football probably teaches us not to do that. Look at the career of Jacob Eason. Look at the career of Shea Patterson. I did some numbers, and I think seven out of the last 11 five-star quarterbacks have transferred from their original school, which I thought was fair, which was fairly telling. And now you've got a situation there where it's like, does Jake Fromm have the great three seasons, go pro, go to the NFL? And then that gives the great baton handoff to Justin Fields. But then most people think that Justin Fields has an excellent junior year. And again, forgive us for really getting on a tightrope here about projecting that far ahead. But you know, Justin Fields is the type of guy when he becomes NFL eligible, and if he's got 1 year of really good reps on the college football scene, then he's an immediate draft candidate because he checks all the boxes that folks want to see out of their projectable quarterback. So, I mean, I think the big thing I wanted to say on that topic is, yeah, Georgia has two scholarship quarterbacks. Lots of other schools in the country would flip situations with them right now, but it is going to be a problem, but it is going to be a good problem to balance playing time and to keep both of those guys on the same depth chart, making big throws for Georgia for the next 3 to 4 years.
At the risk of keeping you too long, and obviously this is like the 18th Friday in a row when I have kept you too long, let me do a quick follow-up on that. Do you agree with something that I've said a few times, that the one thing that I like about Kirby Smart, now he'll handle Jake Fromm and Justin Fields in comparison to Nick Saban, and now he handled Tua Tagovailoa and Jalen Hurts last year. I think that Saban has created for himself a bit of a mess because I don't think that he held an authentic competition. I think that it was obvious throughout practice last year that Tua Tagovailoa was just better than Jalen Hurts, and yet Saban kept riding with Hurts instead of Tua until he absolutely could not do that any longer. And I think that led to some sort of bad feelings on the part of both guys. I mean, Tua's the nicest guy in the world, and he's, you know, made public comments about transferring here once himself and once through Lane Kiffin. You know, there's a nature of that quarterback situation that's almost poorly handled by Saban because I don't think he staged an authentic competition, whereas I trust Kirby to be authentic and forthright about his competition. Ultimately, I think Kirby's going to play the best guy, which if you lose that competition or if you're behind in that competition, you don't like, but at least you know where you stand, and I think that gives Kirby the edge up here. Or am I just seeing that through red and black colored glasses?
No, Brent, I like how we went a little bit longer here today because that is such a big topic to get your arms around. And the kernels that you just threw on the fire, the kindling you just threw on that fire, so to speak, are important. Those things need to be said because it's actually easier when you just make it about football and you make it about a competition. And if five-star A is running the team better, working the four-minute offense better, working the red zone situation better, making fewer mistakes on the practice field, the whole team can see that there's a reason why that he's playing. You know, there's sometimes guys – there's situations all across college sports where that hyped up young phenom player is not playing a lot, and people wonder, you know, are they getting antsy? Are they getting ready to bolt? Are they looking for the next? What's on the other side of the fence? Well, a lot of times, what they see in practice convinces them that I'm not as good as I thought I am. I need to work on it. I need to get better. So I think there's a way that these two big-time talents can coexist when you simply just make it about what's the best for the team and what you put out in practice. If the number two guy is outperforming the number one guy in practice, then that becomes a bona fide competition. It's just strictly straight football and what's best for the team. But if the older guy, the veteran guy, shows a little bit more poise, runs the offense a little bit better, is more used to the game speed of the SEC environment, and that's reflected in practices, well, then it becomes easier to manage this playing time situation where one guy clearly has a click above the other guy. And the challenge, I would think, going forward is even when there is a pecking order established where, hey, reality check here, Georgia probably has two future NFL quarterbacks at that spot right now. So the way you reality check this is you figure out a way to play the one, but also keep the second guy developing and getting better and getting exposure to SEC football as well. And again, tough problem. That's why somebody now makes about $7 million to figure that out. And that's why a lot of other SEC schools would take this problem in a heartbeat.
That is so true, Jeff. Hey, it's great to have you on the program today. As you are probably aware, I am on vacation next week, so I'll miss getting a chance to speak to you. But I'll look forward to talking to you again the following week when we get back rolling here once again for Dog Nation Daily.
Brandon, enjoy that vacation, sir. Very well deserved. And I got one question for you.
Please.
Pop culture stuff. Did J.R. Smith know that the score was tied, or did he think they were ahead? Love to hear your answer. I'd love to hear everybody else's answer.
Yeah, Jeff, I'll tell you, it seemed to me that he did not know the score, and I've seen some of the stuff, like, you know, from the tweets and stuff where you, like, look at his mouth. It almost seems like at one point in time he's mouthing about the fact that he thought they were ahead there. That's kind of an ugly scenario, is it not?
Yeah, and I'm sure coaches everywhere are going to put that one up on the billboards and say, look at this guy, veteran of how many NBA finals, $13 million a year, and yet sometimes fourth and fifth graders know the game, the score, the time, the situation, and all that stuff. I thought it was fascinating television. Whether you're one of those basketball fans that hang on every dribble of the NBA playoffs, or you just show up to be a witness to something incredible in the finals every year with LeBron, believe me, that had the eye of the entire sports world last night.
No doubt, Jeff. We'll talk to you soon.
Take it easy. Enjoy your vacation.
Thank you, Jeff.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
What Jeff's talking about there is obviously game one of the NBA Finals, and J.R. Smith did not know the score, right? I mean, he just totally got lost out there. And, you know, that's a moment where I think he better be very, very thankful that his coach is Tyronn Lue instead of Kirby Smart. I mean, can you imagine? Can you imagine what Kirby Smart's reaction would be if the football equivalent of that happened? I shudder to really think what Kirby would say or do in a scenario like that with as much on the line as you had right there. That is a pretty fun thing to think about. SEC Through time here on a Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. And as the SEC spring meetings come to an end today, what you were going to have here is, I guess, the final piece of news sort of fall into place is Florida's going to find out whether or not Ole Miss transfer Van Jefferson is going to be eligible right away. Florida, along with Texas A&M, has petitioned the league that if you transfer from one SEC school to another because of a bowl ban at the other school, you ought to be immediately eligible at the new school here. I have no doubt that's going to pass. For the most part, the SEC just changes whatever rule it needs to when the school sort of asks for it here. That's why the Saban thing about the graduate transfer stuff is so disingenuous. You can't hide behind the SEC rules because the SEC rules are only what the SEC teams want them to be. And, you know, this is a case where Florida needs Van Jefferson eligible. They're sort of a half program within this framework of the SEC. Ole Miss is sort of a have not. Florida's going to get what it wants here. Van Jefferson's going to be playing. I don't know that Georgia fans or other, you know, programs from the SEC East have all that much to worry about. Jefferson may quickly become one of Florida's best players, but I don't know that he's a game-changing, program-changing player. Florida needs him. Pairing him with Tyree Cleveland at that wide receiver position would certainly be a big get for Florida, but this isn't the kind of thing that I think alters the fortunes of the SEC too much. But Florida will find out about that today. Something we talked about yesterday on SEC Country Live, I thought this was kind of interesting. ESPN was looking at the toughest three-game stretches for teams around college football, and a couple of the SEC teams that got mentioned. One of them was Arkansas, which we won't deal with. One was Tennessee here, though, and how about this three-game stretch for the Vols, starting on October 13th? They're at Auburn, come home on the 20th to play Alabama, then the following week at South Carolina. Now, to make matters worse, the week before the Auburn game is an off week, but the 2 weeks before that, September 22nd, September 29th, it's home versus Florida at Georgia. So, I mean, with an off week in between, you got Florida, Georgia, Auburn, Alabama, South Carolina, three of those games on the road for Tennessee. That could be a really rough stretch for the Vols. And You know, I don't expect Tennessee to be all that good here this season, but that is an example of not only is it not very good, it could be disastrous. I mean, Georgia fans themselves know back during 2016 when Georgia went through a losing streak, that's tough for a fan base to deal with here. And if Tennessee's losing these games and losing them big, I would expect Tennessee to be a blowout loser in a couple of those games. It could be a really rough stretch there for Jeremy Pruitt in his first year as Tennessee coach. Something else that ESPN recently wrote about was they were looking at, you know, it was like a sort of 100-day countdown type thing, and they were looking at those most important games for week one. And according to, like, you know, the FPI chances of being in the college football playoff, the winner and loser, they sort of slated the Auburn-Washington game as the most important week one game. That the winner of this game, according to ESPN, would be the best, you know, spot of any team in week one with a lot of these non-conference games of sort of being in that conference, you know, college football playoff conversation. Obviously, for Washington, there's an easier road after this than for Auburn, who still has to deal with all the SEC West, and the two road games that have been very much talked about against Alabama and Georgia. But it's an interesting look at Auburn there in week one, who I do think has a chance to really wave the flag for the SEC. Now, most Georgia fans will not be rooting for Auburn in this game. I certainly get that and kind of understand why. But I do think that's going to be one of those really closely paid attention to games for week one. And I frankly do think that Auburn is actually going to beat Washington and Atlanta and make a bit of a statement about itself and maybe about the SEC there as well against a Washington team that some people think has a chance to be a playoff team. Last story to get to, this also involves the SEC spring meetings, which have been going on. And, you know, some media have given some attention. We talked about this, I guess, yesterday a bit when Mike Griffith was on the show. Some media has given some attention to the fact that the SEC, for the most part, is going to punt once again on making wide-ranging alcohol sales available in SEC stadiums. That's not going to change. It seems like, based on some quotes from some of the athletic directors in the building there, there's not a strong desire to see this become kind of a league-wide thing. If you want to go to, like, say, the University of Georgia, you know, you obviously in those premium Sky Suites, you can have some alcohol in there, but you know, alcohol not available in the main concession stands. And, you know, most of the SEC, you know, kind of is sort of set up very much in the same kind of way here. And that seems to be the way the SEC wants this to remain. As we kind of close up our SEC through and move into our dog day Q&A here, I guess I will ask, and I know there was a lot of comments in the comment section about this yesterday, but would you want beer sales in Sanford Stadium? And, you know, that's something to debate, and that's something to be talked about here. I'd be curious to find out, you know, what you all think about that. I'm going to take some comments on both Facebook and YouTube about this in a moment, about whether or not you even want the beer sales in Sanford Stadium. Some of you want it emphatically. Some of you seem to be emphatic on the opposite side of all of this. And I guess I'm also, I guess to a degree, curious, is there someone that can explain to me why the SEC is doing this? You know, for the most part, I don't really care one way or another. If they choose to leave it the way that it is right now, I'm not going to be offended by that. If they were to make the change, I'm not necessarily offended by that either. It's not an issue in which I feel all that strong about, but I don't know that any of the explanations thus far have really been satisfactory in terms of why the SEC's not doing this. You know, some people have said, well, this is, you know, just an example of college athletics wanting to be sort of high-minded on sort of a moral high ground here. I don't necessarily think that's the case. It could be, but for me, that has never quite felt like the best explanation for why the SEC is sort of slow in this, especially in comparison to some of the rest of college football, which is sort of moving quickly in this regard. So if you want to weigh in on this in the comment section, love to hear from you on that. Troy Batten says, no, would not want this because there's way too much passion in the stadium, which is kind of an interesting idea. Jerry Lloyd on Facebook says, college fans in stadiums have had 4 to 7 hours to get juiced up before the game, so selling it to someone who's already been partying, let me finish the rest of that comment from Jerry, selling it to someone who's already been partying is not something I want to see at Sanford Stadium. And I wonder if that is part of it, the fact that the tailgating that's going to go on here, you know, you got people, to use his phrase, sort of juiced up already, and then if you're doing beer sales in the stadium, to all of a sudden you sort of bear some of the responsibility for someone that's been drinking way longer than they even came into your stadium, and does that become a liability issue the SEC doesn't want to deal with? I honestly don't know, but I was wondering that. In reading about this weekend too, or this heading into the end of this week, one of the things that I saw was the phrase that Tennessee is, quote, a dry campus. I have to admit, I don't know what that means. Does that mean you can't drink at tailgates on campus at Tennessee? Surely that's not the case, because, I mean, many of you have traveled up to Tennessee for these games for years. What does it mean to say a campus is a dry campus? I thought that was kind of an interesting thing to sort of add into this. Marshall Fleming says, I don't think it's a good idea to sell beer at college games, tailgate before the game, which is obviously what people have been doing for a long time. Chris Branham, also on Facebook, says, I'd like to keep alcohol out of the stadium. Part of what makes college football so special is that you bring your kids and you make long-lasting memories. I don't want some unruly fan ruining the experience like what we see in a lot of NFL stadiums. I think that is true about these NFL stadiums. You know, for me personally, you know, when I see, and I know a lot of this gets sensationalized by the videos that get shared, but a lot of what seems to go on in a given week in the average NFL stadium is just not something I take my kids to be a part of. It's just not. And I'm not going to tell you that there's not occasionally some unruly rowdiness in Sanford Stadium. I'm not going to tell you that doesn't ever happen, but a lot of what I see from some of these NFL stadiums is just, you know, distasteful, and I would not take my kids there. So I guess at this stage of my life, I'm probably a little bit more along the lines of a dad looking out for his kids than a young guy trying to participate in some of the rowdiness. But it's an interesting subject. We'll continue to take some comments. You can hit me up on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily, and we'll do some more comments here live on video as well. All right, as we get ready to wrap up here today, a couple things to tell you about. First of all, as we said earlier, a little disappointed in the Georgia softball game last night against Florida. We still wish the ladies well as they continue their College World Series, but Florida did get the win in softball last night. Give them credit for that. But just quick reminder here that 148 days from right now, Georgia will get its revenge. And we think in a big way in the football game. We do our Gatorator countdown every single day on Dog Nation Daily because we believe that a good Georgia fan is a Gatorator first and foremost, and Dog fans hate the Gators no matter the sport, softball last night, football in October, and everything there in between. I'll also say this as I get ready to wrap up. Once again, no Dog Nation Daily next week. Looking forward to going on vacation with my family, hanging out at the beach there for a week. Much needed for us. We're really excited about that and really appreciative to all of you who not only support Dog Nation Daily every single week, but give us the freedom to go enjoy a little vacation next week. I'll look forward to seeing you the following Monday, and y'all have a great week between now and then.